I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Tonight podcast. I'm Ben Kay and joining me in the pod booth this week is Brian O'Driscoll, who I'm thinking, Brian, you've probably just about recovered from your hangover after Ireland's Grand Slam and Six Nations success.
It was bad.
After the Aviva Premiership took centre stage last weekend, it's the Champions Cup back this weekend with a bang. What an enticing set of quarterfinals this coming Easter weekend with Scarlets getting things kicked off on Friday night and Leinster hosting defending champion Saracens in that huge game in the Aviva on Sunday. We'll be looking ahead to this match and much more on the show. We'll also be hearing from Ireland's forwards coach Simon Easterby, who joined us on Rugby Tonight.
To go to Twickenham at the end and play the way we did in such a massive game, the players were exceptional throughout, but that game in particular, I think we saved the best performance to last, and it was a credit to them, the way they played.
And getting the lowdown from Tadhg Furlong ahead of the monster clash between Leinster and Saracens.
They're coming to the Aviva with a proven record of winning here. You've seen that against Munster. They know how to win big games. They're a European outfit that's had massive success. So, no, it's a massive challenge for us.
To kick things off, we'll have a look through the week's news. So starting off, the Premiership, Ben. The introduction of relegation playoff every 5 years as opposed to annually. What is your take on this?
Well, this is one of those hot topics where it causes such a reaction because it's such an emotive subject. Now, the sad thing is, it's not a sad thing, but what actually is the case is there are good arguments for both sides, and it's going to be very difficult to weigh up which are the better arguments. Now, to play devil's advocate, I'll say at the outset, I would prefer there to be relegation from the Premiership.
Okay.
But there are, to sort of counter the argument, there are a number of reasons why this is detrimental, not only to Premiership rugby, but also to the national team. And I also think, there is a risk factor to some of those clubs. And London Welsh would be the prime example of a team that perhaps had the ambition to be a Premiership rugby without the business plan to back it up. Now, what everyone... The immediate argument when anyone mentions ring fencing is, what about Exeter? The best team in England last year.
They're the anomaly, right?
They are the anomaly. But I remember there were a lot of people who had reservations when the decision was made whether London Welsh were going to be allowed to come up because of their ground and everything else. Tony Rowe, the chairman, everyone said, what about Exeter? If you don't let London Welsh up, what about Exeter? Tony Rowe came out at that stage and said, hang on, don't bring us into this. We've got a business plan that is put in place so that we can survive. We haven't just spent all our money over the last 4 years on players to get us into the Premiership. We've spent it on infrastructure. And then the final piece of the jigsaw was getting the playing side right so that we could gradually move up. Now, in some respects, what they're talking about with ring fencing is doing that. I don't agree if the rumours in Owen Slott's piece in the Times are true that it's a playoff game every 5 years and it's as clinical as that because you're still in the problem there that how do you invest in that and it comes down to one game. That's ridiculous.
The financial implications of a game of that magnitude are unthinkable.
I'll say it again. I would love there to be relegation from the Premiership because I think, as Michael Checker pointed out when he came on our show last week, it's the most exciting league, that and the top 14, because there's never any dead rubber games, because you might get relegated.
There's relevance to the end.
Exactly. That's the huge positive to it that we have to try and keep.
Because if you take relegation out of the equation, you know, you could possibly see by February that you're not going to make the top six.
Absolutely.
And so you have to play out the rest of the season for another 3 months.
I know. Absolutely. But
And your supporters have to go and watch that and see that level of talent. I understand people will say that it's you're professional athletes and you're doing it for your career and it shouldn't, motivation shouldn't be a factor. But
it's more for the fans. You don't have those games because as a fan, you have to turn up every week and watch your team knowing that it's just basically a friendly game of rugby. And that's the major, major issue with it. But equally, I think promotion and relegation is a factor in teams overextending themselves and has been part of spiralling wage inflation in the Premiership, which I don't think the Premiership can actually afford with how big squads need to be cut to cover the increases of injuries that we'll get onto in a minute. But so people want to take that risk because it's that important to stay in the Premiership. If you haven't got enough money, someone like London Welsh, they go, well, we've got to, we need to stay up. So we'll push ourselves and we'll hope it all goes well. But if it doesn't and you get relegated, suddenly a team goes pop. So that's the problem. One of the problems with not having ring fencing is people take too big a gambles that, for me, for the health of the league. The other one is people won't take gambles on players. And you find that clubs go out and look abroad rather than developing English talent, both as a coach and as a player, because they go, well, my head's on the line here. I need to make sure that I've done my due diligence and this guy has experience of playing at this level.
But also, the development of players, coaches, tend not to work on 10-year cycles. Certainly the good ones do, the ones that are confident in their own ability. Yeah. They work on the period of contract that they're under, be it 2 or 3 years.
Absolutely.
So they are given that opportunity.
Knowledge that they might not last that whole contract.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if there's a quick fix, that is the danger.
It's the one that keeps you in your job. Yeah. So it depends on how comfortable you are in your environment to think, do you know what, I'm going to be able to do the quick fix aspect, but I'm also able to grow grassroots and grow the club at the area that it needs for longevity and for academies to be able to feed into that senior team in time and maybe past my sell-by date. When I move on and the legacy that I leave behind is that the club is able to feed itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's harder to do if there's a danger of relegation, though. I still think, if you've got... I know people want to do that, but I think it is about the worst thing that can happen to you is for you to get a club relegated. And so you're less likely to take a chance on a young kid. And we've seen it. We've seen it in Premiership clubs and with coaches. You're less likely to put a number. I think we'll continue to see good young English coaches in assistant coach roles. But I think it's increasingly getting harder and harder to see English coaches being given a shot at the top dog, the director of rugby or the head coach.
It's interesting, just reading Ainslott today, his name escapes me, but the owner of London Irish was one of the ones that talked about ring fencing, the Premiership, and now has come back to potentially bite him on the backside. But if you think about it, across the Premiership clubs, the 12 Premiership clubs that are there, which of them don't feel any level of vulnerability? You look at a huge club like Northampton, who are languishing in 10th at the moment. They have a disaster season in that year, that fifth year, and all of a sudden they are playing for potentially their future.
Absolutely. So the way it's been reported in this, certainly I wouldn't be a fan of that. Just every 5 years, there's just this...
The guillotine this games one, yeah, is what they're one, calling, Ainslott was calling
all
it.
You get that wrong in sort of 100 minutes of rugby and you got, that... Gone for five, that seems, but I wouldn't mind just making sure that there was a bit of stability to the teams that were coming up, because we've seen far too many times that yo-yo bouncing. We've seen it with Worcester at times, London Irish at the moment, Bristol. So one of the other solutions is to grow the Premiership, which in an ideal world, brilliant. Make it 14 teams. All the teams that can currently afford it can come in. But you've then got to get 12 other teams to go, I'll take less money to support these two teams. And I just can't see it happening.
You also need a 58-week year. You know, you were talking about more rugby.
You could cut it down, couldn't you? You could go
conferences.
As they have done in the Pro 14. But again, you know, people, these are all things that get thrown out. Why don't they do this? But as soon as you go to conferences, you then get the friction of, well, actually, how do you work out which conference each team's in? And does that mean that Bath never get to play Leicester in the regular season? Because I'm pretty sure that both clubs would be annoyed at not having the fan base coming to watch those away games. You know, there are, Leicester get a big travelling support, and there's a lot of teams that like to have Leicester at home every year because they know that their crowd are going to go up for that game. So in itself, it creates its own problems. You think you find a solution, but it will all have a knock-on effect for something else.
Yeah, there's no doubt there's going to be a lot more chat about this before anything is definitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty difficult to solve. And talking of which, there's another report that's come out this week about the rugby injury action plan from the RFU. The RFU, I think, need commending on how seriously they've taken running an audit of injuries so that they can track various injuries over the last, well, certainly was brought in as soon as I was in the England squad. So that's going back to 2001. So we have all this data for a long, long time now. Simon Kemp, former England doctor, has been running it. There's a big spike this year in head injuries. But, you know, again, has been reported that, oh my goodness, our game's getting so much more dangerous. Look at all the number. It's surely just down to the education of players, because I'm convinced there are no more head injuries than there were. Maybe a couple or a slight increase.
It's the reporting of them
it's
now.
It's reported. Yeah. So, you know, and as soon as we mention this, everyone, and it's a bit the same, as soon as they mention how they're going to treat, and again, I know that there have been times where medics have got things wrong on the field or coaches have got things wrong and they haven't been strict enough on the head injury assessment protocol. But as soon as it's publicly announced that this is an issue we're going to try and solve, as soon as there's a slight mistake or something, everyone just jumps in. And actually what's trying to happen here is we make our game as safe as possible. Mm-hmm. Every elite level rugby player, just as every jockey, every cyclist knows there's an element of danger, every skier knows there's an element of danger to them participating in the game. It's about making it as safe as possible. And, you know, there's talk, one of the things Simon Kemp has mentioned about dropping the height of the tackle. I'm not sure whether that actually, it goes back to, there's always a consequence to when you do something.
Yeah.
Does it make it any safer if I have to tackle you around the knees all the time?
Yeah, it's...
It does for you. It doesn't for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think you look at certain players, as you know, when you talk about reducing the height of the tackle, the certain players spring to mind immediately. I've never seen Johnny Sexton making a low tackle in all his days. He just doesn't. He's always gone high. And that's always brought question marks as to whether he's encouraging, you know, potential head clashes and so on. So do you... Yes, if it was brought in, of course, you have to learn a new skill. But it's easier said than done, just, you know, modifying the game.
Yeah.
And I do think you saw Bundy Aki, you know, one of the better defenders in that Ireland team, just got his position wrong. He went in nice and low against England a couple of weeks ago and was sparked out. So you're not going to be able to counteract, bad positioning or a bit of bad technique. That's going to still happen.
I think it's, I've got the stats here. Concussion accounted for 43% of injuries to the tackler and 19% to the ball carrier. So that there is a bit of a mismatch there, that it's more the tackler's injuries that are down to concussion. What I would be really interested to see a report of, and it would be possible to do now because all the games have been videoed, they could go back and look at every single head injury assessment and they could say, because just with, you know, my feeling is actually I don't see many people getting knocked out by or having to go off for a head injury assessment by what we're deem as a traditional high tackle, you know, an upright ball carrier getting hit around the head or chin. I can't see. It tends to me, and again, it's just from the number of games I watch, when the ball carrier actually dips into the contact and you see people going low, or as the defender, when he catches his head on someone's knee or gets his head in the wrong position. So I'd like to see a breakdown of, actually, is the dangerous play dipping into contact? And is there anything we can do about that now?
Well, we have seen as well, you know, World Rugby, in fairness to them, have brought in those sanctions on high shots where it's immediate red card. Now, you know, we saw one with Malouf during last weekend.
Cast iron red. Yeah.
You know, I didn't see the game. I just saw it a few minutes ago. I saw him running off for a yellow card. I said, I've heard about this incident. I wonder what it looks like. Oh my God!
Yeah,
you know, it was a Christian Wade that he threw. Yeah, he's still tasting his fillings. Well, it's literally
fair play to Christian Wade for jumping straight back up and not milking it. It's a clear red because you look in cases like that for a mitigating factor, like was Wade dipping, and Wade's exceptionally difficult to tackle if you go low on him because he can get his legs away from you very, very quickly. It's actually easier to he'll leave his body behind slightly, so that's why people I think go slightly higher on him. But he doesn't even dip in the contact at all. So there's no real excuse to Malouf. I think he's half thinking, because Wade throws the ball over the top of him, of jumping to try and intercept and then carrying on to the... I don't know what he's thinking, but it's far too high.
Yeah. So, as I was saying, fair play to World Rugby trying to outlaw that, but it's...
But I think that's where we, as the rugby public, have to realise is that whatever we do to change something has a knock-on effect somewhere else and might cause another just as big problem down the line. And that's why whatever we do has to be well-researched and then tested.
More rooks. You know, if you talk about the tackle these days, we're seeing considerably more. I don't know the exact percentage, but somewhere upwards of 10% more rooks per game, which brings in fatigue, which has a potential knock-on effect.
But the other thing, in the Premiership, where they've reduced, I think the referees have reduced how much you can compete at a ruck, we're now seeing more bodies on their field on their feet in midfield, so the collisions
are bigger.
So you try and make the ruck safer and you can see what's going on, and then it just shifts somewhere else, the problem.
I don't know what the numbers are like at training, but there still seems to be a considerable amount of concussions, which I find flabbergasting, because I thought the level of contact at training had been massively reduced, certainly since in my last four or five seasons it was all... It was all imitation defence and it was body heights. I'm surprised to hear that teams are continuing with the amount of games they're playing and the intensity of games that they're still having collision sections throughout their week.
Well, that is one area that you can address because the NFL have done it. Obviously, they're hugely worried about the concussion problem. And let's be honest, the NFL is a totally different game to rugby. You know, part of the concussion risk there is the number of collisions they were having every single day. Not necessarily a concussion, but the subconcussive blows, because those linemen going against each other, you know, hundreds of times a week is
a cumulative
effect. So totally different game. So let's not say, well, the NFL have got this problem, so we're definitely going to have this problem. We might well, and we need to be addressing it. But they have reduced the amount of contact that is allowed in sessions every week. There's a ban on it at certain times. And that is something that the rugby authorities could do and say, look, between these times, you cannot do any contact. And then everyone would just have to adapt. Now, that might have effect on people's ability in contact, because some players do need to work on their contact skills. Some players feel that they want to do it during the week, just they feel better off they've done a bit. Certainly stopping them all, for example, when we didn't do it at Leicester for a couple of weeks, you sort of felt you weren't quite as together as a team. But if everyone's on the same set of rules that you're not allowed to do contact, then everyone's in the same boat, and that could be a way.
Very interesting, and it'll remain topical for some time. Yeah, I think in other news then, we had the final retirement. People were a bit sketchy on whether it was legit or not, or had it not happened already, but Adam Jones confirming that he's going to hang up his boots at the end of the season. What an incredible career he's had. Wales and Lions legend. What a brilliant guy. I suppose the best way for me to describe is he was a terrific player. You know, from what I saw and in understanding the scrum and understanding a player that evolved through a period of the game where it was in a big evolutionary process, and he evolved brilliantly with it. But he was as good a guy as he was a player. You know, I had a lot of fun with him on Lions tours in 2009. We used to share the back of the bus to and from training. So we had some pretty interesting conversations, and he is a hell of a lot of fun.
He's one of those rare breeds, isn't he? That if you ran into him on the field, you feared him. You wouldn't believe, but off the field, you know, absolute gent. Very funny, very dry sense of humour.
Brilliant sporting knowledge.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant sporting knowledge. Do not question him on any rugby.
Big loss to the playing, but great that he's carrying on in a coaching capacity, full-time with Harlequins now. And, if there's someone you want in your camp to bring on the youth, it's him. But I'm pretty sure there'll be a few ex-English props whose Grand Slam ambitions and games against Wales have been lost solely down to him. Okay, so that's a bit of the past. Big weekend coming up. Starts with the Anglo-Welsh on Good Friday. It's a 2:30 kickoff, 2 p.m. The coverage starts live on BT Sport 2. That's obviously a repeat of last weekend's Premiership fixture between Bath and Exeter, this time played at King's Home Stadium. And then, Brian, the thing that everyone gets excited about straight after the Six Nations finishes, we go into the European quarters and some huge games starting off on Friday.
There's always a bit of a lull, isn't there? You know, the week after Six Nations, we're all a bit
Where's for the Irish players? They all disappear on holiday. The
they
English
were all in
players
Dubai.
All had a fairly
they
decent
had a great
game
time.
Last week.
They were entitled to their break this time round, in fairness. But it is the fact that we only have to wait a couple of weeks now before you get quarterfinal of Europe. So if the players switched off for a second, when you have that excitement of, particularly in Ireland, where the Leinster and Munster players, obviously they went and won the Grand Slam, a lot of them for the first time. They had their week's break. They weren't forced to go back and play domestically in the Pro 14, so they were given time away. But now they have the feast that is Europe again, and the opportunity, both of them with home ties as well. It's such a brilliant competition. It's hard not to get excited about it.
We start on Friday at 5:30. Kickoff on BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD. Coverage starts at 4:45 with a game that I guess sort of the uninitiated rugby folk might not have seen coming as one of the quarterfinals. Scarlets obviously winning the Pro 14 last year, playing some brilliant rugby, but they haven't been in the European knockout stages as much as they have been in their past. Obviously, they were in and around the turn of the century, just after the turn of the century. Turn of the century, is that right? Yeah,
turn of the century.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. In the noughties, we'll say that.
Yeah,
in the noughties.
I like that. It's much better. And La Rochelle, which obviously never been
first year in the Champions Cup.
Top 14 powerhouse, but God, they look good as well, don't they? So that's a hugely exciting game.
Yeah, do you know what it is? It's brilliant because we're going to have one of those two teams. It's fresh blood.
Yeah.
I know Scarlets have been there before, but it does feel like an eternity ago that Stephen Jones and actually our guest in rugby tonight, Simon Easterby played, I believe, against a Leicester team.
He did, he got knocked out on Lewis May, funnily enough, with our discussion.
Way.
Yeah, it didn't used to happen back then. But Larry, he got knocked out, I think, on Lewis Moody's hip bone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moodos was all right.
Funnily enough.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know, you might be able to edge a guess as to how long ago that was. It's
that
over a decade ago, though.
Yeah, well, we played...
I'll tell you when it was. It was 2008.
Was it that long ago?
Yeah. 2007? 2007.
Yeah, and then obviously...
Oh, it was Munster. They beat in the quarterfinal because that was a big... Yeah, it was one of the last games in the old Strady Park.
Yeah.
And Munster were champions coming to them, so they made sure... I do remember it well because they made sure that no Munster season ticket holders were able to get anything on the black market.
Very sensible.
Yeah, smart. Sensible. They're smart down Strady Park way.
They are.
Or
and what a game that is, the new stadium, newish, Parky Scarlets. How do you see that one going?
Just looking at Scarlets' form, do you see the issue when you're playing for the national team, when you're with the best region in Wales, you're going to have the lion's share of players. So at times, I think the first game they might have had 10 or 11 involved in the 23. Yeah. So you know, for your team to survive throughout the Six Nations period and keep the confidence up, keep their style up, it's not easy when you have that huge a personnel change. So they would have welcomed the opportunity to play some players again last weekend.
Is that also a good thing that those top players that are away with Wales continue that momentum and they're all on a high from getting in, you know, some of them into the international setup for the first time? Because I think it works both ways. I think one of the reasons England haven't been quite as good is because that Saracens spine weren't quite as bulletproof going into this. They perhaps didn't have the confidence that they had. And I think the teams that make up the biggest percentage of your national team,
they need to
if
go
they're on
well.
A high, then the national team gets a benefit out of it.
Yeah, so it's difficult to see how Scarlett will let this opportunity pass them by, but La Rochelle, you know, went to the stoop early on in round one and put Harlequins to the sword. They've been very, very good at home, incredible home record, but Scarlets will back themselves. The 15-man game that they play, the open, free-flowing style, I just fancy them to work La Rochelle. Very hard, big pack in that La Rochelle team. You look at some of those front rowers, you know, Priso's been playing for France. They've got Antonio in the front row as well, who plays a bit of second row in his spare time. So you've got some big units, and they will obviously, you know what La Rochelle are going to do, but you know that Scarlets play to their strength, and it's their ability for everyone to be a ball player.
And they also, even if they go points down, they're never going to be out of it because it only takes a couple of minutes to score a try, and they've got the firepower to do it. Also, I'd be a lot more concerned for Scarlets if it was over in La Rochelle, but Parker Scarlets with 900 extra seats going in, I believe. Yeah.
Biggest game they'll have.
The whole of West Wales, aren't they, La Rochelle? So,
I think it's mouth-watering, and to know that one of those will be in a semi-final in a few weeks' time, I think adds a great freshness to the competition, something that was needed. You were maybe in danger of seeing the same teams getting to knockout stages, the Saracens, Leinsters, the Claremonts, but it's great to see a bit of fresh blood in there.
Absolutely. Last time Scarlets reached a Champions Cup semi-final, a certain Simon Easterby was captaining the side. He joined us in the studio this week and explained how big their upcoming game against La Rochelle is for the region.
I guess the work that they've done in the last couple of years has been incredible, and to win the Pro 12 last year, as it was a reward for a lot of that. But I think now they see themselves with the sort of team, the squad that can compete at the top end of the game, and there's no doubt that they produce that sort of rugby in the group stages of Europe to go into the quarterfinals and go into this game against La Rochelle at home with every confidence that they can get through to the semi-final. I think home quarterfinals is essential, and I think probably only one in four quarterfinals is won by an away team in history. So I think it suggests that
you replaced Lawrence as our starter.
You gave me that earlier. No, I just think that the Scarlets, with like Ben and Brian said, the form that they've taken, the way they're playing. Against a good team in La Rochelle, who have got some really quality players, I think the Scarlets will be favourites, and rightly so.
And then moving on to Saturday with a 3:15 kickoff, Munster against Toulon. Munster beat Scarlets in the Pro 14, but they've had a few injuries along the way. Any updates on that?
Well, we definitely know that Keith Earls is out. He tore his knee ligaments. He's going to be out for 6 or 7 weeks. If they do get through to the semi-final, I think he's going to miss that as well. You just feel as though he's a huge player for them these days. He's obviously one of the senior players, but he gives a confidence to that back line. He gives huge X factor that maybe they've been missing for a couple of seasons now that he's in the form of his life. So I think when you lose, you know, your big performers like that, it definitely deals a little bit of a blow. But I've learned a long time ago that as soon as you write Munster off, Munster off, particularly playing in Thomond Park, you'll be made a laughing stock of. And even Toulon, they've showed pretty good form coming back in. You look at the array of players, even the centres to choose from. You know, you've got Nanu and Bastereau and Fekitoa and Radrada can all play in the centre.
With how Bastereau seems to have come back into form, he has been
so good. You know, captaining France for the first time,
and then Chris Ashton as well. 21 tries in a season. Yeah, that's phenomenal.
It is incredible. So, do you know what? I still favour the home team just because I know how hard it is to win in Thomond. But Toulon is three-time champions. I don't think they're quite the Toulon that we saw a few seasons ago, but they're starting to get back to in that winning form, and they will be a handful. It'll be a matter of, you know, what Munster pack turns up and what ball that they can offer for their halfback partnership of Keatley and Murray to control the game. I think Chris Clutie is gone for the season, who's been very good for Munster at seven. He's been a real find for them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, they'll be looking to some of those key individuals. Blaendall, another one gone. So Keatley now has the stability at 10, knowing that he is the man, and Conor Murray has been in the form of his career, so they'll really be looking to them to dictate play.
Yeah, and then there's the all-French quarterfinal on Sunday at Clermont. All-French affair, Clermont against Racing 92. Now, usually, you'd write this off as a guaranteed Clermont win, playing in Europe at the Stade Marcel Michelin, but they haven't been having the best of the seasons. In fact, they're targeting Europe because pretty much are they out of the playoffs? They can't get into the playoffs for that. They are
in ninth position now, as far as I go. Yes,
they've had a terrible injury run, haven't they?
And they're away from the pack positions. Now. They're away from the pack. They got nilled at the weekend.
Yeah,
I think
thrashed.
An absolute cricket score put on them. So realistically, this is their only opportunity. It's unprecedented and uncharted territory for Clermont not to be in the mix come this end of the season in the top 14. So to be able to have only one competition to really focus on, will that be what they've needed?
Well, we know, don't we, that Clermont have traditionally always wanted to win Europe because they've got so close, but you know, the French teams possibly put more stead in the top 14. So maybe an opportunity to beat Racing, who are still fighting on that front of the weekend. We'll see. But then our big game on Sunday is a 3:30 kickoff, BT Sport 2 and 4K UHD. We're on air from 3. It's Leinster against Saracens. Saracens have to travel to Dublin, a tough place to go. Big crowd expected.
You would think close to sell out. You know, it's a 51,000 seater in the Aviva.
I think they announced today it was up to 47 so far, so you'd expect that to close out.
I'm sure there'll be a few walk-ins, I think you come to quarter-final stage, it's that balance. Fans always ask, do you try and keep that real home advantage of staying in the RDS versus the financial side of, you know, doubling your audience at least and having a huge payday?
You couldn't play that.
You just
game
couldn't.
Else.
Those days are past where you're focusing. If you can't back it up in the Aviva, you know, you're not going to win this competition.
Shall we have a quick catch up with Tadhg Furlong then, who Craig Doyle caught up with, and see how he's enjoying life after a historic Grand Slam and what they're doing in preparation for the visit of Saracens.
Well, Tadhg, a bit of calm before a brand new storm, European rugby this weekend, Saracens away in the Aviva Stadium. But before that, your reflections on an amazing Grand Slam.
Yeah, it was special. I mean, you know, for a group of players to achieve a Grand Slam is always, a memory to cherish and hold on to.
My 10-year-old son said to me a couple of weeks ago, Dad, what does the tight head do? And I said, well, what he used to do was just lock a scrum and push and then eat a lot. The game has changed so much, as we saw, as you've been the link man for CJ Standers' try against England. The game's evolving so much, and of course you're in the thick of that.
Yeah, I would say I still do eat a lot and push, but look, I suppose it's Joe. Joe came up with the plan and, you know, it worked well. And, yeah, I think that's the way it's gone, though. The game is gone. You see, you know, Mako playing for Saracens at the weekend. Like, he's going to be the same. He plays a lot of link plays for them. He's a strong boy in the scrum. And obviously,
you probably leave friendships and stuff like that at the door and you get onto the pitch. Look, I'm looking forward to testing myself again against arguably one of the best loosehead props in the world.
So your granny has been in the spotlight of the Grand Slam, and she finds watching the games pretty hard work. What's it like for her watching you in action?
Yeah, Granny Wexford, my granny back in Wexford, she lights a lured candle beside the television, and then every scrum she has the holy water at the ready, and she's sort of pegging it at the television just in case she's afraid I'll get hurt. So luckily it's worked so far, so I hope she keeps doing it.
Leinster's impressive, of course, what happens on the pitch, but the brains behind it all, really, really impressive as well, particularly when I go back to the Exeter game, getting yourselves in a bit of a hole at the start. Who's the voice out there that goes, lads, this is what we have to do?
Yeah, I think if you look at the squad, there's quite a few. I mean, you know, the skipper, Easton Asiwa, is an incredibly calm head. Obviously, Johnny drives us around the park. And, you know, the line-out Dev takes, Scott Fardy's a big voice for us. You know, there's never one person taking the scruff of the neck, and there's never any sort of ties out of the pram. When you're under the pump, you try to find a solution as quick as you can and as calmly as you can.
Saracens won on the weekend. Looks like they're back on track. What do you expect from them on Sunday?
They're coming to the Viva with a proven record of winning here. You've seen that against Munster. They know how to win big games. They're a European outfit that's had massive success. So for us, after a disappointing, nearly very close year last year, but not quite there, you know, it's a massive challenge for us, and I suppose a test to see where we are as a group.
Your granny, so on Sunday, will she be throwing the holy water at you to hope you scrummage well, or at Mako putting a curse on a scrum technique?
Well, she doesn't have BT Sport, so if you want to maybe
we
hook her up with a package, she'd be more than happy,
we
I'd
need,
say.
We, yeah. need, we need to sort that out straight away. We need her on our side if she's throwing holy water around the place.
So Saracens have not had the season that we're used to them having. They had that run of six losses on the bounce, but they recovered, did really well to recover, got their season back on track. A couple of disappointments during the Six Nations when players were away. They've still got injury problems, though players just starting to come back. It'd be too early for Vunipola, Billy Vunipola, that is. Farrell's a doubt, but there are a few players that are coming back into the mix. How much would losing Farrell cost them, do you think?
Well, he's been one of the best players in the year, or in the world over the last 12 months. European Player of the Year last season, and I think he was one of the shining lights for England over the course of the Six Nations. Anything good that England did, it seemed to come through him. So he is he's definitely a focal point for them, even though Lazowski is a very fine player and come in. I think the differential between Farrell to Lazowski isn't as vast as Vunipola to the next player, whoever it is. I still think he's a sort of player that galvanises the team.
Well, that's exactly it. It's not necessarily what you lose as him as a player, it's the
name
leadership.
The name on the team sheet. Yeah. Players just feel warmer inside when they see certain personnel down there. And that's where the 50-50 call, I think, you know, a player that of similar ilk is probably a Sean O'Brien. Yeah. You just feel you're better off having them in your team, irrespective of form or conditioning.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it would be it would be a big blow for Saracens. I also wonder, with Owen Farrell and knowing how tough he is, that if he's a doubt, it means he's definitely not going to be 100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's probably still only at best going to be working off 80 or 85%, but that's better than most other
Absolutely.
Players.
Yeah, just having him in and around the environment. Really interesting subplot for a lot of English fans will be Stuart Lancaster back on the big stage again. Obviously, we all know of the fallout from Rugby World Cup 2015, but just talk us through how appreciative his coaching's been in Dublin.
The lads love him. Except for Tuesday. Their session on a Tuesday these days is meant to be absolutely appalling. Renamed Tuesday, which is meant to be that concept of having it tougher than any game that you're going to be involved in. So they are always badly in need of a Wednesday rest day off the back of it. But they've you know, I've only heard positive things about his coaching techniques and mentality, you know, both defensive and in attack. Initially he came in a defensive capacity, but he's evolved their attacking shape in unison with Leo Cullen. And let's not make any mistakes here. Stewart has come in and is dictating everything. Yeah. I think a lot of Leinster's the brainchild of how they are playing has come also from Leo Cullen, and they work as a great partnership.
I saw a quote from Stewart actually saying the reason they work as such a great partnership because they're identical personalities and neither of them have got an ego. So he's been very quick to put forward how much work Leo's done, and it's not down to him, despite everyone picking up on that big news story, because he's gone there.
Yeah, so he's been a revelation, and I think he's, do you know what, he's delighted to be back in a coaching capacity. I think that's what he missed when he was with England. I think he was front and centre, and the media work and the behind the scenes work that goes on with almost being a director of rugby type role. He had to take a step away from actually putting his tracksuit on and being out on the pitch every day.
Yeah, and that's it. There's no shame in that. You know, people sort of talk about Wayne Smith. He wouldn't necessarily make the greatest number one at an international. You know, someone like, people are saying parachute him straight in to do Eddie Jones's job. But actually, he's good as a number two, and the environment's much better with him on the field with the tracksuit on. Should we do some predictions then, Brian? If we start with the Scarlets La Rochelle game. Yeah. I'm going to go Scarlets.
Yes, as am I. Do you know what? If you look at the history of the competition and knockout stages, particularly quarterfinals, that 3 out of 4 have been home victories. And I sense it might still be the same again. I'm going to go with Scarlets as a home victory just because I know how tough a place it is to go and play and how confident they are there. So the new boys, La Rochelle, might have to wait for another season to get themselves a home quarterfinal to get into an elusive semi-final or final.
Okay, and then Munster Toulon. I know you're saying off-air that you think Munster will get thrashed. but I'm going to go for Munster. I think Thomond Park is too big a step for Toulon.
Yeah, I agree. They have it in their blood, and they love putting that jersey on. And I think for Europe, it's a different atmosphere, different existence down in Limerick for those weekends. So I'm going to go at Munster too.
And then Sunday's game, the All French affair. Don't get many away wins, do you, in the knockout stages of Europe? But do you think this might be one?
I think so. Just looking at form. The pressure that Claremont are now under, the scrutiny where their supporters, it is somewhat unusual to them finding themselves not in knockout territory in top 14, and with that extra pressure, I just wonder, with their home record not being as impenetrable as it was in previous seasons, can Racing come and create an upset? I'm going to go with them just because it's that 3-1 split of home versus away. So Racing for the away victory.
Oh, three. So you've already given away what your next one is.
Correct, I have. Did you think that I could possibly side with Maro Zoji and Owen Farrell?
Yes. I think I'm in agreement with you on that one. I think Leinster will win home advantage. The way they played against Exeter has proven for me that they're probably favourites for the whole tournament. Just glimpses last week of a few of those hurting England players coming back. Maro Itoje, obviously, with the try and the little sleeping tired celebration, very funny. It's not going to be a walkover for Leinster, and nothing would surprise you about Saracens.
No, it wouldn't. If Saracens went and scraped a victory against Leinster, I think it'll be a tight game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be overly shocked because of the calibre of Saracens. What I would say about them is that if you're going to get Saracens in the knockout stages, now is the time to get them. I think they will grow with confidence, and their knockout intellect will get stronger and stronger come semi-final and final. So if you're going to pick them up, congratulations, you finished top of the pools, number one seed, you're getting Saracens, the two-time champion. Best place to get them is in a quarterfinal.
Yeah. Okay, that's what's happening in the Champions Cup. Also this weekend in the Challenge Cup, BT Sport at 8 p.m. on Friday. We've got Pau against Stade Francais. That's BT Sport 2 from 8. And we've also got Connacht versus Gloucester on BT Sports 3 and 4K UHD from 12:30 on Saturday. Other games in that quarterfinals is Newcastle against Brive and Edinburgh against Cardiff Blues. But that's all we've got time for this week. Next week, Rugby Tonight is on the road and we'll be coming to you from Chippenham RFC, where Tom Dunn will be joining us on the show. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review if you've enjoyed the Rugby Tonight podcast. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itsinas.
Kayla Itsinas. I'm Kayla Itsinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.